Greetings, everyone. Good to see you all. Here we go. This is Thursday, June 6th, 2024. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are embarking on our first Thursday of the month, World Peace Meditation and Satsang. Satsang is an old Sanskrit word that means gathering of truth. So we're going to be, that's kind of a lofty title for what we're doing, but hopefully we'll approach truth somewhat, somehow, in what we're doing. And I know that you're joining us from all over the place, some from the East Coast, some from the West Coast, some from Hawaii, some from in between, all those places. And we, at least is in Florida, where it's hot and humid, and we're up here in Hidden Valley Lake, California, where it's hot and dry. We have a heat wave right now that it's not too bad, but it's a portent for what's to come. Yeah, and that, like Madeline just reminded me, we have a waterfall here that we built a few years ago, and so if we get too hot, we go sit under the waterfall, and it's very cooling actually. Madeline was already there three times today. So we enjoyed that. It's like a little grotto in the side of the hill where we live. And we put a pump in and a water. It's a pool. We dug it out and made a pool and cemented it. And we look out over the lake down below. So we were able to cool off, and it's been quite a day today, actually, because maybe I'll mention a little bit later, but I'll mention it now just in the beginning while we're waiting for maybe a few more people to come to join us. We had visitors from Berkeley, California, coming up from India. There are people from India, two people from India, who just did the film. I'm not sure if you've seen it. It's probably you haven't. It has a name, has a Hindu name, because it's mainly for Indian people. But it translates into English as Mother's Milk. And it's about the dairy industry in India. And it's an extremely well done video. It's pretty disturbing in a few places. If you know anyone who says, "Oh, dairy is not that bad in India." Yeah. It's all small farms, and you know the cow is part of the family. And, watch this video because it's very sobering. It's really just a devastating situation for the cows and buffaloes in India. I mean, a lot of the milk comes from buffaloes, water buffaloes, and cows are seen as kind of sacred. Buffaloes are seen as you don't care about them. You do whatever you want to them. But even the sacred cows, they're pretty maltreated also. I mean, they showed a picture, video footage of a doctor who actually goes, he's a veterinarian. He goes to some of these cows that live on the streets. We saw them when we were in India. There's a lot of cows that are living on the streets. And they are just, they're just trying to survive. So they're eating whatever they can get. And this veterinarian said he goes, he cuts open their stomachs to relieve them because he says they're carrying around about usually 50 to 60 to 70 pounds of plastic. They just eat plastic bags, and they're in such terrible pain from eating all this plastic, and they can't eat any food, and so they're starving. And then it's really, I won't go more into it, but they can't, after a while they can't move, and then the dogs just go after them. And so this idea of the sacred cow is not very true, actually. So anyway, I recommend the film. I mean, if you really want to know the dairy industry in India, and the main point that they make is that the whole meat industry is a result of dairy. because there's all these cows and they have to kill them. There's way too many because they're mainly into dairy. And so they have a whole meat industry. They're one of the largest exporters of meat. So the spirituality comes in. But anyway, what I was going to say is these movie filmmakers came here because they're working on a new film on Buddhism and veganism. And they wanted to interview me for that, as well as another new film on animal rights and human rights and how they're connected. So I spent hours doing interviews today already. Which may or may not end up in these films. I guess there'll probably be something, but these films usually take a couple of years before they actually appear in the world, so we'll just see when they come out. But it's good, I think, just to see documentary filmmakers working on these things. All right, so let's go ahead. I guess we'll go ahead and get started. Maybe more people will be joining us. And here's Tammy from Canada. Oh, good, we got Canada here. And as you know, what we'd like to do in the beginning is take a few minutes and do a meditation together. So we'll do that, and then we'll just open it up for any things you'd like to share, any ideas or thoughts you have regarding spirituality, meditation, veganism, and kindred subjects. So let's go ahead and turn our attention within. As I guess you are aware, we're at home here in California, so I'm sitting at the piano. And before we started, there was some music playing in the background from our Islands of Light CD, devoted to developing intuition, which is really the whole power that we have, our intuitive wisdom, the inner authority. So let's begin our meditation together, becoming aware of our breathing, joining into this community. Community of like-minded people who are all devoted to doing the best we can to awaken to the truth that we are, for the benefit of all living beings. Exhalation, allowing ourselves to enter more deeply into the silence of our own heart and mind, where we dwell always in unity with the infinite love that is the source of our life. Force for healing. force for kindness and compassion, a force of forgiveness, of creativity and love. We give thanks for all of the teachings that we have not only learned from other people, but the teachings that come to us from animals and from nature, and the teachings that come to us from the awakened beings surrounding our planet, who come to us in our dreams to remind us of the eternal music and song that sings in every cell of our being, that awakens in us the yearning to rise higher and higher understanding and our capacity to love and to embody the creative spirit, to be a vehicle into this world, joy and freedom. Give thanks for all of the teachers who have appeared in our life, whoever they may be, human beings, through their lives and their examples and their writings, their teachings, their traditions, animals, trees, the wind and the moon and the sky. Who could ever ask for better teachers? So we give thanks for the whole animal rights movement and everyone who's working to spread the message of animal liberation. We give thanks for all the movements for justice and peace and freedom for humanity. For caring and kindness for all living beings. A tremendous amount of work is done every day by countless people to build a better world, a more kind and loving world that cares for everyone. Join together in our common aspiration and radiate into the world the four immeasurable states of consciousness, the four abodes of our true nature. Breathing and engendering in our heart the feeling of love and kindness with every inhalation, with every exhalation, we radiate love to all living beings, abiding in love. sources of happiness. Engender in our heart the feeling of compassion, the yearning to act, to help relieve the suffering of others, to help relieve the suffering of others by shining our light. Help remove the causes of suffering. Abiding in our true home of compassion. Radiating compassion for all living beings. Compassion also for the unique being we are. Abiding in compassion. We radiate peace and harmony in all directions, all living beings. We see everyone on this earth true nature, at peace with each other and with themselves, abiding in peace, and the whole earth bathed in the beautiful light of peace, abiding in our true home, abiding in peace. peace. Abiding and radiating love. Abiding in and radiating compassion. Abiding in and radiating joy. Abiding in and radiating peace. Joy, peace. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free. May all beings realize the original brightness of their minds and hearts. And may we as human beings continue to work together to build a more enlightened society, a world that reflects the inner light that shines always in our heart, at the core of our being. Exemplify the Homo Ahimsa, nonviolent essence of being, that is our true nature. We give thanks knowing this is so. So it is. Thank you, everyone. We always appreciate your presence and your commitment to our movement for spiritual maturity and helping the vegan movement to grow and prosper, to liberate animals and liberate humans. We're all in this together. And as I was saying during the interview today, he asked me, the interviewer, what is the relationship between human liberation and animal liberation? And I think really when we look at it carefully, it's our human liberation depends on us liberating animals. If we don't accomplish that, if we're going to continue to insist on exploiting and abusing animals, especially at this massive scale that we do, millions every day, then we're sowing the seeds for our own exploitation and enslavement, and we see that as something that's happening. So these are not just pious thoughts or intellectual ideas. These are realities that we are really wrestling with, not only individually, but I think collectively, to make the effort effectively to liberate animals and to be able to share these ideas with other people in a way that helps them do the same thing. So I want to, again, thank all of you for working in this, because I know you all are in your own ways. And it's great to come together and encourage each other, because, as I've mentioned before, in the I had this Buddhist thing on my mind because I was talking for hours about Buddhism and veganism. The Eightfold Path, it's right understanding and right action and right livelihood and right effort and right thought and right meditation and right contemplation. But all of those Eightfold Path that leads to ultimately to liberation and awakening, there's this ninth one, the ninth right. And the ninth right is right association. That it's absolutely true that we human beings become like the people around us. So if we would like to raise our awareness, it's really helpful to create communities where that's possible, where we have similar values. And the more we can do that, that's why I think it's so important to have these satsangs, because coming together like this in a shared association where we have a similar perspective and we value the deep respect that is owed to all expressions of life, and we nurture that, that creates a field that helps to raise everyone on the planet. And of course, when we leave this little gathering, very often we go back to other relationships. When we're in the store and we have to pass by the meat section, and we meet people who say, well, I enjoy bacon and all these things. So we are a small group in a large, mostly hostile sea in many ways. And so as you know, we have these two meetings every month. The third Thursday is for more getting into the nitty-gritty and the politics and the activism and all those things. This one, the first Thursday, is only 60 minutes maximum, and it's more focusing on the spiritual dimension. But of course, not to be totally exclusive, because I always remember what Gandhi said. Gandhi said, if someone says that politics is not spiritual, then they don't understand politics or spirituality. So I know there is spirituality in politics, I mean, for sure. And the way we engage in the world and do our action in the world is always a result of how spiritually awake and involved we are. But I'd like to know if anyone has anything that you would like to bring up, because it looks like we have about half hour at the most, and I'm happy to address any questions or let this conversation go in a way that you feel would be useful for you. So, Judy Carmen, yes, what would you like to share? Feel free to.
I will. Yeah. That was so beautiful. Thank you so much for the meditation. But what I wanted to ask is, what can you describe yours and Madeline's meditation practice for us? And I think it would help all of us, because we're all trying to learn to meditate in the most effective way, and it's such an important part of our lives. So any kind of hints you could give us I would love. Thanks.
Right, right. Yes, that's an important question. Meditation is in many ways they say in Latin, sine qua non. You know, it's like without meditation, we will not get too far on a spiritual path. Meditation broadly defined, because the mind, especially in our society, is wounded. From the time we're little kids, we see ourselves as separate. We see ourselves as just a physical body. We see others as physical bodies. Our mind is jumping all over the place. The main problem people have when they decide that it would be good to get their life in order, to have spiritual progress, to be more peaceful, to heal, there's many different levels of motivation for meditation. And whatever the motivation is, whatever the level is, whether it's just purely selfish, I just want to meditate so I don't go crazy in this crazy world, or I just want to meditate so that my blood pressure goes down, or I want to meditate so that my relationships are more harmonious, or I want to meditate so that I can be a force for raising the vibration of humanity so that we don't have war, or I want to meditate so that I think the highest is to achieve enlightenment, to liberate all living beings. And so there's many different levels of practice, but what we discover in our society, and I think probably this is true in other times as well, but especially now, the mind is completely difficult to work with. The mind will just jump all over the place from thought to thought. So the meditation is basically two things. So what we do, to answer your question, is take a certain period of time, and that's really up to you. We have about two and a half hours in the morning, and the main part of it is sitting quietly. I sit, I've been doing this a long time, so I actually just sit in the full lotus, but you can sit however it's comfortable. The main thing is you have a straight back. You want your posture to be upright, because the basic idea is that the posture of the mind and the posture of the body mirror each other. And of course, we live in a society where we're just raised on chairs and sofas and couches and all this stuff, and all of it supports our back, and it puts us in a position where our stomach is sort of slouched in and the back is being supported, and it's really not conducive to it. So if you have a cushion or something or some kind of a chair you can sit on and be centered in your body, and then the actual practice. Okay, so the actual practice, there's many different practices. What I do, and Madeline also, very similar, is first engender the motivation. So think of all living beings and dedicate the effort to the benefit of all beings, to expand it just beyond myself, to really include all living beings. And then the actual practice, I somewhat hesitate to say, but I'll just say, because I think, you have to find your own practice. It's kind of hard to do somebody else's, but there are general practices. The one that I've done a lot, and I still do it quite a bit, is breath awareness. So there's different ways of doing breath awareness, but just become aware of your breathing, and you can watch the breath, and if you can just keep your attention on the breathing, and when a thought comes in, be aware of the thought and then let it go, and then bring your attention back to the breathing. That's great. And you can add a counting to it. I've done that, and I still do that sometimes. If I feel like my mind is a little bit more unruly than usual, I'll just count each breath up to 50, and then from 50 back to down to 1 again. And put all my attention on the counting. And that takes maybe, 15 minutes or whatever. And then the practice that I've been doing for years is a Zen practice that is based on questioning the source of what I am. So it's just being open and listening. What is this? What is this? This is Will Tuttle, or whoever I think I am, whatever I think this is. Just have that. Just be open and go deeper with that question. And when thoughts come in, let them go. But the thing that's important with this is that the meditation needs to be something that you are really committed to, and you have you're making an earnest effort. That's really the foundation of everything. If to the degree that we're earnest, in other words, we feel strongly, emotionally, really, like I really would like to awaken. I'd really like to find out the truth that I am and not live my life in this deceptive illusion of being a separate self and struggling and getting upset and so forth. If we have a strong motivation, that is the most important thing, because that will propel us to just do the meditation every day with never missing one. And then while we're doing it, to stay with it. It's kind of like practicing the piano. You know, here I am, I'm sitting here at this piano, and I can like set a timer for 30 minutes. Like when I was a kid, I'd say, okay, my father would make me write it on this little chart in the kitchen, bulletin board that I practiced every day for 45 minutes. So I did. I sat there and I practiced my pieces, you know, for 45 minutes, and then I would go outside and play. but I could have just sat there for 45 minutes, I guess, and just sat at the piano bench and then read a book, you know, that I was interested in. I'm not going to get very good at playing the piano if I sit there and just read a book. Well, it's the same thing with meditation. I mean, we can set the timer for 30 minutes or 40 minutes, whatever it is, and sit there and just think about what I should have said to that guy and what I'm going to do or what I'm going to make for lunch or what I'm going to, some project I'm working on, and just, we can do that. And we can say, I meditated for half an hour. But in a way, that's like sitting at the piano and reading a book. You're not actually engaging. You're not actually putting your fingers on the keys. So it really, you know, meditation really requires us to work with our mind. And our mind, in a way, doesn't want to be worked with. You know, it would rather just we'd rather be unconscious, really, and just let things go. So it really takes a yearning to be free, I would say, to really get to a deeper level of happiness. And one of the reasons I think that we don't have more little success in the world of meditation by people is that people have not gotten to the point in their lives where they really desire liberation, spiritual liberation. They still think, yeah, that would be nice, but you know, I want to make money and I want to have this and I'd like to, you know, have a nice dinner sometimes. And, you know, so, you know, the Buddha did not attain enlightenment by thinking of all these things he'd like to do. He was like, this is it. I'm going to go for this. But we don't attain that high level of desire, I mean, a healthy desire for enlightenment until we're very advanced on the path through many lifetimes. I mean, we've got to go through a lot of lifetimes of hard spiritual work. And with every lifetime, the yearning will get stronger. And until you get to a certain lifetime where the yearning is really strong and you go for it, right? If you're not going for it right now, it's because you're still not that evolved, right? I mean, we still think that we can somehow do other things and that's okay. Because that's what the whole society is telling us. That's what all our upbringing is telling us, that we should focus on all these outer things. So that's it. So the basic thing with meditation practice is not so much what practice you're doing, because you can be watching the breath, you can be saying, what is this? And opening to that, you could be repeating a mantra. But the key to the whole thing is doing it wholeheartedly, just totally devoted, 100% like in it. That's the key. The more we realize that if I just indulge my thinking apparatus and the conditioning, that I'm just not going to make any progress. This life will be frittered away in that, which, you know, maybe it's not the worst thing, but it's a missed opportunity in the sense that a human life is a great opportunity for spiritual awakening. And the more we awaken spiritually, the more we can help others. I think there's a direct connection there. I mean, I think it's an exact connection. It really is like, it's a direct correlation. Like, if spiritual awakening goes up, our ability to bless other beings goes up. If it goes down, our ability to bless other beings goes down. And so, if we want to have a really effective vegan movement, that we'll have that when the vegans in the movement are doing the spiritual work and embodying this whole thing. I keep saying that, but I think there's got to be some kind of realization of the importance of freeing the mind from compulsive thinking. And so it's first taming the mind. The mind's going all over the place. And so just, it's like, you know, in the Zen tradition, there's the 10 ox herding pictures. And so the first three or four are just looking for the ox, and then you find the ox, and then you have to grab a hold of that ox, and it's like hard work. That's the mind. It wants to run all over the place. You've got to actually say, no, I'm focused on what is this? What am I? What is the source of what I am? Really wanting to know that fully and deeply. And when we just have the mind focused on that, and everything else fades away, and there's this sense of one-pointedness. And so if we can get into a condition eventually of one-pointedness, that's referred to as samadhi, that is where real progress actually is made spiritually, because then suddenly, instead of the intellect working, our intuition kicks in, and we realize directly that what we are is what makes this physical body possible. We're not this body. We're on a whole other dimension, really. But we're functioning through this. And that doesn't happen without doing the work of taming the mind, getting the ox, learning to do it. And so, that's the work. And then with time, the training continues, and we begin to penetrate deeper and deeper into the veil, beyond the veils. There's lots of different veils, lots of different levels of understanding that we can pass through, and then the energy, the chakras begin to get activated, and our body begins to purify, and all kinds of things. That's why it's very important that we be really conscious about our food, have really clean food, right? I mean, whole, organic, plant-based foods. Really be mindful about our relationships, that we're in integrity and so forth, and just live our life as impeccably as possible in terms of not deceiving others, because meditation has two sides. One is when we're sitting, just sitting, that's what we think of as meditation, the practice. So like I'll sit for a good hour right off the bat, and that's the sitting meditation to bring the mind into the silence. And then, of course, give thanks for the opportunity. And then when we go into our day, then that's really, in a way, I mean, I shouldn't say in a way, really, that's also a time of meditation. It's in Zen tradition, it's called absolute samadhi and positive samadhi. So absolute samadhi is a one-pointedness of mind when we're sitting quietly, and positive samadhi is when we're walking around doing the dishes and talking to people and so forth. And the idea is the more we keep the meditative attitude just going, as much as we can, 24 hours, then the more deeply we'll be able to enter into a meditative state when we're sitting quietly. And that will support us when we are in the world to bring that same consciousness as we move around. And that will support us when we sit quietly to go deeper. So they feed each other. You create a positive feedback loop. So it's really helpful to break that idea that now I'm meditating, now I'm not meditating. It's like we're always meditating, it's just maybe our body is not moving, we're just turning our attention really within. But in other times we're doing walking meditation or eating meditation or whatever. So I know, the other thing to mention, I don't want to go on too long here, it's already 15 minutes, but just say, to be aware that we are being tempted. And this is a thing for me too, because I spent my whole 20s pretty much, it was before the computer, and I just lived in monasteries and meditation centers for about almost 10 years. So I really, in the early part of my life, I just dove in because I had so much yearning to awaken. And since then, I got my PhD at Berkeley, and I taught college, and then traveled with Madeline and do lectures and books and all this stuff. So I've been pretty active. I meditate. I've never missed a day. I don't think I've ever missed a day of meditating since 1975 when I started. I mean, it's absolutely like never going to happen that I'm not going to spend at least, 45 minutes or an hour sitting in meditation. But the point I wanted to make is that besides the commitment to it and cultivating the yearning, we can cultivate that yearning because when we see that ultimately we're not going to get anything ultimately satisfying from the outer world, it really is. It is Maya, actually. So when we understand that, then we really cultivate this yearning to purify our consciousness. So the point I want to make, though, is that technology is, in many ways, a huge obstacle in our society. Our technology keeps impinging on us more and more. I know here I am sitting and talking to a microphone, computer, and all this stuff. But it is. It's a problem because we tend to be more and more consumed by technology that separates us from nature. So it's good to take time and wean off of technology every day. And, I take a swim in the lake and I do different things. And the world of machines, human conditioning and all of that, it pulls us in. And it's a helpful tool, but we have to see it's got a lot. It comes out of a mentality of separateness, domination of nature. It really comes out of that when you go deeply. So we have to just do our best to be proactive, to take time to sit quietly in silence, to take time to connect with nature, to take time to connect with people, talk to them. It's nice to talk like this, but to talk face to face. And if we don't, and we become more and more disconnected from nature and from each other and from ourselves, and we become more and more merely machine people, which has been happening, then we'll find the machines are beginning to control us, or the people who control the machines are controlling us. And that's a big danger now. So meditation is more important than ever. Connecting with the best thing about meditation is when you're really working with the mind on a regular basis every day, then you get to know yourself, how the mind works and how what you're thinking about tends to manifest in the outer world and how thoughts and feelings go together. And I mean, to really understand ourselves, it's hard to do it without an inner life of meditation. So I would, as far as a practice, I don't really do mantras that much. I've done them in the past and chanting, and that can be really helpful. I've done a lot of breath work, actually breathing, both controlled breathing and also just watching the breath. But what I've kept as my practice for decades is the question, who am I or what am I or what is this? They say it in Korea, imogo. Imogo means what is this? And because it's not really a who, we're not a who, we think we are, but we're far greater than that. But anyway, so one of the best things, I guess, is to just see what your temperament is drawn to in terms of a meditation practice. All meditations do the same thing; they bring the mind from being scattered into being whole, being right here, present. Relaxed and present. That's all meditation is, a relaxed and present state of consciousness, which is completely different than what we're taught in our society. We're taught to be stressed and in tension and trying to change everybody and change ourselves. So it's completely different. It's just being present, being relaxed, being attentive, just watching the breath one after the other without thinking of anything else. I mean, if you can do that, that's it seems so easy, but it is really not easy. But with practice, we develop, it's like building up a muscle. We just develop the practice. So the most important thing is consistency and persistence, and then, like I said, earnestness, yearning, diligence. You know, that's what the Buddha said when he passed away. He said, diligently work out your salvation. You know, we work it out. It's only through commitment, being committed to it, you know, and that just comes with time. We get more and more, we realize more and more anything else, we know where it's going to lead. You know, you can, it's not going to get us there. So it's really up to us to set the sails of our own boat and sail it in that direction. And there'll be lots of winds pushing us all kinds of ways. And we have to have our firm hand on the rudder and a firm hand on the main sheet and hang on and keep the boat going the direction that you're sailing. And that's up to each one of us. And the beautiful thing is when one person does that, it just naturally encourages others to do the same thing. So instead of just getting blown all over the place, but by whatever the authorities tell us is true, we have our own internal guidance system. And that's really what comes to us through meditation. So did I answer it well enough, or is there something else you'd like me to elaborate on, Judy, or anybody else?
That was great, Will. Thank you so much. I kind of see you and Madeline as the shining examples of meditation and dedicated meditation and doing it every single day. But one thing that I have trouble with is I get sleepy and my head will start to nod. What do you do? Does that happen to you, or are you past that?
Yeah, that's a good question. It depends on when you're meditating and so forth. So there's different ways of dealing with that, and lots of stories. That's one of the reasons that we get up relatively early. You know, we get up and start meditating at about 5:30, because usually you get up and we splash water on our face, we drink. You know, I get a little fresh air, do a little exercise briefly, and then sitting. So I don't really have an issue with getting sleepy typically during that time, but maybe later in the day at noon or maybe in the evening before we go to bed, we also meditate, and I find myself getting a little sleepy during that time sometimes. So the best thing is, again, if you are diligent, you know, you just sit up straight and try to rouse yourself, and you can stand up. I mean, you know, like Khusan Sanim, who was the Zen master at Sanglongsa in Korea, where I was a Zen Buddhist monk, he told his story. Like he was one of those people that had this tremendous yearning to awaken, and so he went on this retreat up in the mountains of Korea. And he had someone who was helping him and bringing him food, so he didn't have to worry about that. And so he just was meditating. And he was afflicted by sleepiness. And he was so determined to not let that stop him that he started doing standing meditation. And he stood and meditated. And he stood for hours and hours and days. He said, I know these Koreans, they have these vests that are quilted. And he said he stood without moving for so long that birds would land on him and they would peck at his padded vest and pull the padding out and use it for their nests. But he didn't, he was so committed to attaining enlightenment that he just let that happen, didn't pay any attention. He just kept meditating because he was in a state, you know, at a certain point you get into a state of no mind, it's called, just no thoughts. And so people have done that, have tried standing. They've tried sitting on the edge of a cliff so that if they fall asleep, they'll die. So, no, really, I'm serious. People do that. But I think, you know, it's just, it's one of those things, you know, it's good to try to work, you know, try to do it at a certain time when you don't think that'll happen, or to do some, you know, some activity beforehand so that your energy is up, if you can. What else can I say? It is, you know, I've seen it. I mean, they used to, when I was in the Tibetan Buddhist Center, everybody laughed and they called that phenomenon the Tibetan head dance, Because people would be sitting there meditating, and we would meditate for so long, we'd have to do these long retreats, the whole day, you know, we're sitting there. And so when you look around, and at one point, you know, everybody's like, their heads are bouncing up and down, they're half asleep, and they're waking up, and half you know, it does happen. But and there are teachers who say, that's fine, you know, if you get sleepy, but just keep sitting there, and at a certain point, you'll wake up again, and then just keep going. You know, just keep going. You know, that's for people who are doing a lot of meditating. You know, it's like if you get sleepy, just push through it, and then at a certain point, you won't be sleepy anymore, and then you'll be able to be even more alert. You could also, like what Madeline does, is if you feel sleepy, just set your alarm for like 10 minutes, lay on your back and do a power rest and just go out for 10 minutes and then on your back. And then when the alarm goes off, you'll wake up and then you'll be refreshed and then you can meditate. You can try that too, having just a power rest. But, you know, the ego is always tricky and it'll do everything it possibly can to avoid being exposed for being a thief. You know, the ego, this self, is always stealing the present moment from us and stealing our happiness and stealing our peace, and it does not want to be exposed. And meditation is like directly exposing the ego, because the ego is behind, in a sense, what we call the ego is the force that is behind everything. Like if you watch your thoughts, you will realize that all of your thoughts are going around and around me. The sense of a me, like my relatives, my friends, and it's always reinforcing the sense of a me. And when you actually try to find that me, there really isn't one. It's kind of an illusion. So it doesn't want to be discovered that there isn't a me, that what we are is far greater than this little self that keeps, so it will use everything. It'll use sleep. You'll get all so drowsy. Every time I try to read a spiritual book, I want to meditate. Oh, I just get so sleepy. Or it'll use the opposite. We'll get all, you know, frazzled, and our mind will jump around a million, you know, places. So the whole idea is just to see that and watch it and just be the one who's the witness of it. Witness the sleepiness. If you go away, then come back. Now, in a way, what's required, and they talk about this, is, like I said, is earnestness, having an indomitable will, having a sense of, if you don't want to look at it that way, just a sense of, I'm really serious about this. I'm not going to let myself be defeated by these old tendencies that crop up and that everyone will agree are you know, things that are just natural, is part of being a human. But we don't know what's natural to be a human. We're far greater than anyone can imagine. And so it's important for us, I think, to push through all these things. Uh-oh, it's time. Wow, I can't believe it. It already went so fast. I apologize, everybody, if I went a little bit too long. Is that okay, Judy? Are you good for now, anyway?
Yes, thanks. That was just wonderful, Will. That was so helpful. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks, everyone, for your kind attention. We really try to stick by our 60 minutes. Does anyone have anything really pressing? If not, we will go ahead and do our prayer together. And we have a lot to talk about on the third Thursday. I mean, hearing all this bird flu thing and all these other things. But anyway, let's go ahead together and unmute, if you don't mind, unmuting your microphones, if you're comfortable with that, and we'll say our prayer circle, our worldwide prayer circle for animals prayer for the animals and for all of us together.
The prayer here, he's doing some.
So again, it starts with the word
compassion.
Compassion, circle, fear, passion, everywhere.
Compassion, circle, fear, everywhere.
Yeah, we say that every day at noon. We invite you to do the same thing and to feel it, and just when you're going through the day, just say it. Just knowing that compassion encircles the earth for all beings, and we are that compassion. That's a great meditation of itself. All right, we love you. Thanks, everyone. We look forward to the next time, and stay in touch. And if you have any questions, just get in touch with us. Much love.
Thank you, Will.
We love you, too.
Much love.
Bye-bye.
Love you.
Thank you.